Anne's laughing. I am so excited today to have Anne Vucek on the show. I met Anne through a friend, and I believe that everyone is put into our lives for a reason. And I reached out to Anne because I wanted to get somebody on the podcast, and instead we got talking, and now I'm going to Medjugorje because of Anne. And I want to say, Anne, thank you so much for being you and for saying yes to come on the show.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. It's great to be here. I love your little dance at the beginning. If I knew, I would have done one with you there. Thank you. I want to say hello to you. Thank you for inviting me on. Hello to all of your listeners, to all of your viewers. It's great to be here with you all.
It's so great to have you.
I'm so excited that you're coming to Medjugorje with us.
I know. I can't believe I'm coming, you guys. This is crazy. I was like literally a week ago. I had thoughts of going to Medjugorje just for years from friends talking about it, going, that's on my bucket list. That's on my bucket list. And you have no idea when your bucket list is going to present itself and you just have to say yes.
That's such a sign of God at work, because it happens when you least expect it.
Doesn't it? Because we sit here and we plan and we plan and we plan and we think, oh my gosh, if I do A, B, C, and D, and it all looks this way, everything's going to work out. And sometimes it doesn't work out, which then takes people down these rabbit holes, I like to call them.
But you know what? When we choose to live a life of surrender to the Lord, whether things happen the way we think they should or not, if we live a life of surrender, he takes over anyway. So it's all in his will. That's the way I view it anyway.
Well, I love that way of viewing it. And it's so important to me because we're in the season of Lent for everybody out there that's Christian. And Passover is also coming up if you're Jewish. And I want to bring up the Spirit of God because I truly believe in my heart, at the bottom of my heart and my soul, that to become sober and to be a sober person, you really need the spiritual element. You can't, there's no human power that is going to deliver this to you. Now, by the way, if you're here for the first time, welcome to Busy Living Sober. I'm a certified health and wellness coach, a certified recovery coach, and a life coach. And I welcome you here. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe to my channel. Now, Anne, tell us about your story and how you came to where you are today. Like, where did you grow up? What was your childhood like? And what was your, you know, young adult life? And how did you get to where you are today?
Well, I'll have to tell you the Reader's Digest version because it's a long story, but I'll tell you, I will be brief about it. So I am Croatian. Medjugorje is in the country of Bosnia Herzegovina, and the people there are Croatian. I was actually born in a little village 2 miles away from Medjugorje, but my family came to the United States when I was 2 years old. So I grew up basically, I live in Chicago, and I grew up in Chicago. And, you know, I like to say I grew up in a very loving, faithful Catholic, very close-knit Catholic family. But I started going through some really difficult things. I was the subject of a lot of bullying when I was, you know, from fifth grade through eighth grade. And that bullying really left a deep scar on my heart and soul. It left a wound within me. It left me filled with anger. It left me filled with bitterness. You know, I, as a 15-year-old kid, before that, from like 10 to 15, I just didn't understand, like, why are they picking on me? Why am I the butt of their jokes? Why am I that kid that's separated out from the rest of them? And those wounds in childhood caused me to act out in ways that even back then I recognized were destructive. I started getting into destructive behaviors, you know, by the time I was 11 or 12 years old. I probably had my first joint and my first drink when I was, you know, 11 or 12. And I remember, and I was filled with anger. I was just this angry kid. I remember like every other word out of my mouth was a swear word. And I remember, you know, my uncle, my mom's brother, was the pastor of our parish. And I remember like being in church and hearing about this loving God that supposedly was loving, right? And it didn't make any sense to me. Like I kept thinking, if you're really a loving God, I don't understand why you would allow a kid like me to go through what I'm going through. And so I kind of decided, you know what? I think God is a subject that was made up to help children fall asleep at night so that they're not afraid to go to sleep. Like that was, you know, in my wisdom of 12 years old, that was my conclusion. And So up until the age of 15, that's who I was. I was filled with pain, filled with anger. Every other word out of my mouth, like I said, was a swear word. Down a destructive path. Like I would come home from school. I just remember this so well. I would come home from school and I would be filled with so much like just emotion and pain from what had happened in school that day that I would come into my room and I would take a pillow and I would put it over my face and I would scream and cry into my pillow because like I needed to get it out. But in my sort of limited understanding of things, I never told my family about it because I thought something actually really was wrong with me. And so I didn't want my family to find out that I was defective in some ways. Like I believed the lies that the kids at school said to me. And so I would come home, I would like, scream into my pillow, and then I would go downstairs and pretend like everything was fine. And I remember, like, even back then thinking, if this is who I am now, who am I going to be 5, 10, 15 years from now? Like, I remember recognizing that the path that I was on was a destructive path and that it wouldn't have a good outcome if I continued going on it. But I didn't know how to change anything. I didn't understand. I certainly had no understanding of the spiritual life. I had no understanding of the ways of the Lord working. I had no understanding of the power of grace or anything like that. And then something amazing happened, something life transforming happened. The summer of 1981, I was 15 years old, and my parents decided that we were going to go on a summer vacation to our family home. It was at the time, it was Yugoslavia, the former Yugoslavia. And we got there June 9th, 1981. Now, for people who know about the apparitions of Medjugorje, the apparitions in Medjugorje, those apparitions began June 24th, 1981. So we got there 2 weeks before the apparitions began. And the plan was that we were going to stay there till the end of that summer, till the end of August 1981, like 2.5 months that summer. And home base was going to be our little village, 2 miles away from Medjugorje, but we were going to go to like different parts of the country to visit family in different places. And I like to say when I share my story, June 27th, 1981, I woke up that morning. My dad had invited my sister and I to go shopping with him that morning. And I always say, when I woke up that morning, I had no idea that I would go to bed a different person that night. I could never in a million years have imagined that the God of the universe, the God who created all things, was going to enter my heart and my soul in a very real and concrete and personal way that day and change my reality. The reason that I'm sitting here today doing the ministry that I'm doing the work that I'm doing is because of what happened that day, June 27th, 1981. And what happened, it was very simple, not anything, shocking. I mean, it was shocking in terms of the effect that it had on me. But we went into town to go shopping. And my dad ran into a cousin that he hadn't seen in many, many years, and he invited the cousin to go for coffee. And so the three of us, my dad, my sister, this cousin, and I, we went to this outdoor cafe and we were just sitting and chatting. And all of a sudden, the man leaned into my father like this and he started whispering something to him. And I remember being like, what the? Like, what is he like? What is there that he can't tell us that, what's so secretive, And, after a few minutes of that hushed conversation, my dad turned to my sister and I, and he leaned across the table to us, and he said, "My cousin just told me that the Gospa, which is the Croatian word for the Blessed Virgin Mary, for Our Lady, he said, my cousin just told me that the Gospa is appearing over in Medjugorje, and that she just started appearing there 3 days ago." And in that moment, that literally, the instant those words touched my ears, my life was changed. I've shared this story hundreds, maybe thousands of times, and every time I always say, I don't know how to describe what happened. It's like when you the only way that I can just kind of describe it in a physical sense is I had this sense that my heart was being filled with something that my chest could no longer contain. It was like my heart was expanding to such an amount that it was like gonna bust out of my chest, right? And it was being filled with the presence of something. And at the time, I knew nothing about the spiritual life. I mean, I didn't know anything about the ways of the Lord. I didn't know anything about the mystical life at the time. That's come many, in the years since then. I just knew that there was something in me. Today, I understand when I look back on that moment, I understand that that was the moment when God entered my life in a very real and concrete way and made my heart his dwelling place, placed his spirit within me. And, you know, I like to say, when you've been touched by God, if you're not changed by that touch, it wasn't an authentic touch of God. When you've been authentically touched by God, it changes you. And that moment changed my life forever. And I spent the rest of that summer going to Medjugorje every day that I could. Medjugorje has since then become one of the most visited shrines in the Catholic world. 50 million people have traveled there in the last 40 years. You know, I was there on the fourth day of the apparitions and saw the development of it from the very beginning. And what that did in my subsequent years, my own experience was there's a scripture passage, something about, I won't remember offhand where it's at, but something about, I am compelled to preach the gospel. Paul, I think, said, I am compelled. That's what I felt like. I felt like I've been given something. I've experienced something real and profound and powerful and beautiful. And I saw how it changed that angry, atheist, swearing girl who was full of wounds. All of that stuff disappeared. It all literally disappeared. That's why I love what you said at the beginning when, you know, you talked about how God can, you know, having that experience of sober living through spirituality. God is the heart of all of that. Like, yet, you know, I'm kind of jumping around here a bit, but before I started doing full-time ministry, I was a social worker and I did therapy, I did counseling, I did child welfare, I did all kinds of things. And in my counseling work with some of the clients that I had, I saw movement in them. I saw movement towards healing. But I always felt like I had one hand tied behind my back because I would so often think, if I could talk to you about God, if I could talk to you about opening your heart and soul to the reality of God's mercy and love and healing, your wounds would be healed a whole lot faster than just talking to me and a human being who can just listen to you and help you and give you some, you know, guidance. But I don't have the power to heal you. God does. And so God healed me of all of that. I mean,
Wait, I've got to ask you, I've got to interrupt you, and I hate doing that, but I have to ask you a question. So why couldn't you say, okay, if you bring God into my life, was it because of your boss? Was it due to politics? Like, why couldn't you say to your clientele, you know what? If you really looked into your relationship with God, like, why do you
yes.
think you couldn't?
Here's the crazy thing. I worked at a Catholic agency.
What?
And that Catholic
Okay, you
agency.
guys, if you're listening, my eyes are really big. My mouth just dropped open. I mean, a fly could have flown in. Wait a minute, that's crazy.
I worked for one of the, I won't say the name of it. I worked for one of the largest social service agencies in the country, Catholic social service agencies in the country here in Chicago. And, but because we received federal funding, we were not allowed.
Oh my, that is so sick and messed up on so many different levels. It makes me crazy.
Yes, I know.
And so, oh my gosh, that
I
must
know.
have made you
It
nutty.
you know what? It drove, you know, I'm the first person to say that if somebody needs a counselor, needs a therapist, needs a psychiatrist, needs a psychologist, go and get the help that you need because all of those disciplines have something powerful to offer. But you are it like I said earlier, it's like you're going forward with your hand tied behind your back. If you seek God along the way, and if you seek your healing through that spiritual life, that's why, you know, I love the 12-step programs. In my previous work, you know, in as a social worker, we worked with 12-step all the time. We were constantly sending clients to 12-step programs. I loved the approach of 12-step because it's all about finding that higher power. And when you find that higher power, things change. When you find God in your life, things change. And therapy and counseling and psychiatry and psychology, all of that has a role to play. But God is the only one who has the ability to lift out of you these wounds, to take, and for us as Catholics, particularly, I say this all the time, the power of confession, the power of the sacrament of reconciliation. If you're carrying wounds, if you're carrying memories, if you're carrying burdens, if you're carrying guilt or shame or whatever it is, Yeah, you can work through it with a great counselor, but God can lift it right out of your heart and soul and give you complete freedom. And so that's why I'm such a huge proponent of combining, having a multidisciplinary approach to healing. That it's, there's so many ways that God wants to heal us. He heals us through medicine. He heals us through counseling. But he also heals us through his own direct intervention through the grace of God into our hearts and souls.
This is all amazing. Now, by the way, I'm making notes so I don't forget because all these things keep popping into my head and I'm like, I can't forget this. I can't forget that. So I keep this notebook here. And I want to go back to a couple things. For one, instead of that day that your uncle or your cousin was sitting there whispering to your dad, instead of being like, oh my gosh, this is for one scary, whereas today the kids would say anxiety provoking, right? You were like, no, I want more. I have to go there every day. What do you prescribe that to? Where did that come from?
I would say this. Imagine you go to a restaurant, right? And you eat the most delicious meal you've ever had in your life. Are you going to leave there going, eh, I'm never going to go back there again? You're going to want to go back and have more of that, right? You're going to, whatever beautiful things in life we experience, we want more of that. That's what I felt. That's, I didn't, like I said, I was a 15-year-old kid with no knowledge of the spiritual life. So I didn't know what was happening in me. I just knew that it was connected to this place, Medjugorje. And so I went there seeking more of this, what I was experiencing here. I think that's the normal human reaction. When you experience something beautiful, when you've been someplace incredible, when you've met somebody who's unbelievable, you want to be around that person. You want to go back to that place. You want to have that experience again. That's what happened to me. The person that I met was the person of Jesus Christ, right? And I wanted to know him more. I didn't even recognize it as that at the time. I just knew something was happening here and it was connected to this place and I needed to go back to get more of it. And I can tell you, man, God doesn't disappoint.
Well, I can tell by just looking at your face, you're so bright, and I cannot wait to meet you in person and give you a hug. But so you go into the social work, you work for Catholic Services, you're looking to these people like, I want to help you. I love that you brought up those 12 steps. I think step number four, when I was getting sober 17 and a half years ago, I was like, step four, oh my gosh, that's easy. That's like confession. Oh my gosh, you telling me I get to just go clean my palate? And I find it so interesting. Even two young women that were at my house the other day, they are newly sober. And I looked at them and I said, which step is the hardest part? Which is the hardest one for you?
What
And
they say?
they said, step four, step four. And for me, step three is the hardest one.
I was going to say, I think it would be step three.
Oh my gosh, it's totally step three. And it has been, it still is step, I mean, when I was younger and my kids were young, it was like, oh wait, you want me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him? And you want me to do that for me and my
Yes.
think so.
Step three demands a radical surrender. To say that, to say I'm turning my life and my will over to a higher power, there's a radical surrender there. And I think especially in our times, we're not used to surrendering our will, our lives over to anything but my ego, my own will. I think we know that very often doesn't lead us in the right direction. I can tell you that the most exciting journey you could ever go on is one with the Lord. Like the Lord has, if we plan this much in life, God has this much for us. I mean, when we give our lives to Him, He plans more than we could ever ask or imagine, right? He plans more for us than we could even, and He even, one of the things that I love is that He does things through us that by our own nature, we could never do ourselves, just to show us that it's him at work. I love that. I love that. That's why, like, there's a lot of things that he's asked me to do in the years, and I've come to this point of going, okay, I can't do that, but you better show up if you want that done, because it's got to be you and not me doing that.
And I hear that so much, so often. I know when we were talking, one day, and when we spoke the last time, and you mentioned to me Ben Shapiro, and I said, oh my gosh, you know, Ben Shapiro says all the time, like the best self-help book that you can buy is the Bible, because it has every answer you would ever want in that book. So you sitting here, you're on your journey, you're doing your social work, you're going and seeing clients, and what happens?
Well, yeah, I started to say, and I didn't finish that, but what, the Bible passage about how I'm compelled to preach, I'm compelled to speak. That's what I felt like. I felt like if I've been given this incredible thing, it wasn't even like I decided I want to talk to people about it. I decided I want to do ministry. It was like I have to. I'm compelled. I'm propelled. I don't know how to describe it. It was like the passion of my life and my heart to help other people encounter what I encountered, to help other people find that most amazing meal that I had at that restaurant. I want to tell everybody that I know about that restaurant and that meal that I had at that restaurant. That's what I felt like in my life, in my heart. And when I finished college, I decided in college I studied th theology and psychology just because I, theology was a passion because of the whole spiritual journey thing. And I really wanted to do a life of ministry. That was my passion. And I tried finding jobs in ministry and I couldn't find any jobs and it just wasn't happening. And so I did what a lot of people do post college when they don't know what else to do. I'm like, well, maybe I'll go back to grad school. So that's what I did. I went back to graduate school just because I didn't know what else to do. And I got a degree in social work. And I thought, well, okay, it's not ministry per se the way that I want, but it is a form of ministry. And all the while that I was going through grad school, all the while after I finished grad school and started my career in social work, all that time, I still felt that burning desire for ministry and the burning desire to really dedicate my life, not just on the side to helping people encounter God, but to have that be the full focus of what I do. And that's a whole nother long story, which I don't think we have time for today. Maybe another podcast.
Okay.
But literally one day, God spoke to my heart quite literally and said, I want you to leave your job. And that was a whole journey of how where that led me. But I did end up leaving my social work job through receiving many, many signs from the Lord that this was indeed what he wanted. And that was March of 1999 when I left my job. And ever since then, I've been doing full-time ministry. That ministry has taken me to unbelievable places. I spent seven, right after I left my job, I spent the next 7 years working with a stigmatist priest from Croatia, actually, who was manifesting all of the gifts of Padre Pio. And so he was the spiritual director of a retreat center on an island in the Adriatic coast of Croatia. So I spent the next 7 years living and working at this retreat center on this island in the Adriatic coast with this priest who was filled with the Holy Spirit in ways that I had never encountered in my life before. And working alongside him, and we had people coming on retreats from all over the world. We were doing retreats week after week after week after week. And watching him and working beside him, I saw the Holy Spirit at work in very real, tangible, concrete ways. And it was like, this is what I want my life to be about, this kind of stuff. And after that, I decided I didn't want to live in Croatia anymore. I love Croatia. I am Croatian, but at heart, I'm an American too. And so I ended up coming back to the United States and continued my ministry here. And it's taken me in directions that I never could have imagined. I'll share this one thing with you. I'm always the person who likes to sit quietly in the corner with one or two people having a quiet, deep conversation. I'm never the person who likes to be the life of the party, the center of attention. And like whenever I in college and grad school, I always avoided classes that required doing standing up and giving speeches because I was not just afraid, I was phobically afraid of public speaking. This is what I was saying kind of earlier. Sometimes God calls us to do things that we can't do ourselves. I could not stand up in front of a room of three people in my theology classes in college and say, hi, my name is Anne. This is why I'm taking this theology class. I literally would panic for days before thinking about having to do that. I would get all sweaty. I'd be like, and my name is Anne. And that's just what I was like. And the Lord wanted me on stages. And you know, I've been on stages in front of 15,000 people, 20,000 people, and all of that anxiety about that is gone. And so the Lord opened the doors for me to go out and speak publicly about Medjugorje. I've spent lots and many, many years interpreting for the Medjugorje priests and visionaries. I organize pilgrimages to Medjugorje. I'm working on several books. I do YouTube stuff. And now the most recent thing is we're working on a major Hollywood movie about Medjugorje. It's been this crazy journey that I never could have envisioned in my life.
Oh my God. Well, I think it's all so exciting. So if you were to tell my listeners that don't understand one thing you just said, because they're like, wait a minute, a visionary? What is she talking about? And what are you talking about? Medjugorje? I've never even heard of this place. And you said the Lord came there and Mother Mary was there and all these whispers and these priests. Wait, what are you talking about? So in layman terms, will you tell us a little bit about what the Aborigines, what they saw? Like, give us one little story, maybe, so people can understand why your dad's cousin, so I guess it was your second cousin, was so excited about Mother Mary coming and appearing in 1981. What was it? So will you tell them?
Yeah, so thank you for actually saying that. You know what? In my world, I'm surrounded by a whole lot of Catholics. And so, you know, everybody has their jargon. We have our Catholic jargon. And so I'm just used to kind of using certain language and assuming that everybody around me knows what I'm talking about. But when there's people who don't have that experience, yeah, I could see them being like, what is she talking about? Being all confused. Well, so in our Catholic tradition, we have an incredible history. You know, the Catholic Church is full of incredibly beautiful treasures. And one of those treasures is that there is a history of mystical events that happen. There's all kinds of mystical events that happen. If you just read a little bit about it, we have things, you know, I can't even, you know, priests that have the stigmata, like I just mentioned, which is the wounds of who, you know, people who bear the wounds of Christ. We have, you know, Eucharistic miracles where Eucharistic hosts end up, you know, they suddenly turn into human flesh. You can read about these things. And one of the things that happens is we have beautiful saints in the history of the church. But one of the things that has happened historically in the Catholic Church is that there is a history, a long, centuries old, more than that, history of the Mother of Jesus, Mary, the Blessed Virgin Mary, as we refer to her, coming to earth and appearing to people on earth. And there's been lots of reported apparitions of the Virgin Mary. Not all of them are authentic, not all of them are approved. You know, people may have heard of the more known ones, places like Lourdes in France, places like Guadalupe in Mexico, places like La Salette in France, places like Fatima in Portugal. And that's what Medjugorje is. Medjugorje is a place in what was Yugoslavia, communist Yugoslavia, what is now the country of Bosnia and Herzegovina, where on June 24th, 1981, the Blessed Virgin Mary came to six young people in this village. And the incredible thing about Medjugorje is we are now 40, what, 42 years, 43, almost 43 years from that first date. The Virgin Mary has continued appearing daily for those 43 years. Every single day for 43 years, the Virgin Mary, originally there were six visionaries. Three of them, over the course of, you know, the years, she stopped appearing to them daily. They don't know why. She just said to them one day, "Tomorrow will be the last time you see me on a daily basis." But there's three of them that continue to see her every single day. And these apparitions, by the way, I think it's important to note that when all the other apparitions that I mentioned, they were all in times when technology was not as it is today. These apparitions of Medjugorje are the most studied, scientifically investigated apparitions in the history of the church. They've been investigated left and right. There have been all kinds of studies done on the visionaries during the time of the apparitions. During the time of the apparitions, they've done things like, as part of the investigation, they've done things like, you know, touch them with needles, put fire, like, you know, kind of take their hands and put a flame like right here. They've poked them in the eye during the apparitions. And science and biology will tell you that when you do certain things like that to the body has these autonomic responses that you can't control, pupils, reacting when you put light into them or whatever. When they would do all of these things to the visionaries during the time of their ecstasies, when they were seeing the Virgin Mary, their bodies were not reacting at all to any of those phenomena. Their bodies were not flinching to the pain of the fire. Their pupils were not reacting to the light in their eyes. They were not reacting to being poked with needles. They would feel it afterwards. Afterwards, they'd be like, "Ow, what did you do here?" or whatever, But during the time of the ecstasy, it didn't happen. And so there's been, very quickly, the world media heard about these apparitions, and people from all over the world started flooding there. And so it has become one of the largest pilgrimage sites in the Catholic world. It's not yet an approved site, but I think it's important to say it takes many, many, many years for apparitions to be approved, and the Medjugorje apparitions are ongoing. That's most likely the reason why they're not yet approved. However, the Vatican has taken extremely positive steps related to Medjugorje. Just to give you an idea, four or 5 years ago, they approved official pilgrimage to Medjugorje. So they basically said, all pilgrims, any Catholic entity, any Catholic parish, any Catholic diocese, any Catholic organization is able to take groups to Medjugorje. That was a huge step. The other thing the Vatican did was they appointed a bishop whose name is now the current one is Bishop Aldo Cavalli. He's a retired archbishop from Italy. They put him in Medjugorje, in residence in Medjugorje, and they gave him the title of Apostolic Visitor. So he's the official apostolic visitor on behalf of the Vatican in Medjugorje. What that basically means is that Medjugorje has effectively been put under Vatican control. So they've taken as many steps as they can right now to show the support of the church towards Medjugorje without actually approving the apparitions as of yet, most likely because they continue to be ongoing. I hope that explained it. If there's
It
anything else.
really did. I mean, I'm in awe of it because I think so many people want to poo-poo this and poo-poo that. Like, that's not real. This isn't real. That isn't real. And, my son's an engineer, and he, people will be like, there is no God. And, one of my favorite things about the 12 steps is I've known so many people that have come in as atheists, as you mentioned, even yourself when you were a young girl, and they come and they work the steps. And then they finally realize, oh, wait a minute, we aren't alone. This isn't just me by myself. I always have God with me for my entire life. And it's, the media, some parts of American media especially want to poo-poo, like just bring this darkness in. And even, our president, as much as I, hate to say it, he says he's a practicing Catholic. And, we're killing more babies. I have a friend and he talks about it all the time. He's like, you wonder why there's a darkness and there's more babies killed right now due to abortion than they've ever been in the time. And you wonder why God would be upset.
And you know what? One of the things that I think this is one of my passions to speak about, and that is, people often kind of ask, okay, why did she come? Why is she here? What is the purpose of all of this? And you just talked about the darkness that's around us, and like you said, the evil of abortion and all, the agendas that are, everywhere these days that are contrary to gospel values. One of the most beautiful things that is happening in Medjugorje, like I shared with you my story of what happened there. My story doesn't matter in terms of like, doesn't matter if you know what happened to Anne, but why I share that story publicly whenever I can is because what happened to me is what God is doing on a regular basis in Medjugorje. The people, I've been taking groups there for almost 30 years now, and I cannot tell you every single time people go there, they have that encounter with God. So, people come at various different phases along their journey with the Lord. Some people have been walking with the Lord for a long time. Some people are at the beginning of their journey, but everybody that goes there has an encounter with God that takes them to a deeper place in the spirit. That's what God is doing there. God is pouring out. It's not just about, like, a lot of times people think, well, okay, it's apparitions of the Blessed Virgin Mary. It's all about Mary. But guess what? When people go there, they find out very quickly She's like the lure. It's like the ultimate bait and switch, right? She's the lure. She gets you there. You know, whether people come out of sensationalism or whatever it is, she gets you there, that people are lured in by the sensational of what's happening there. But when they get there, what they find is that the heart and soul of what's happening in Medjugorje is what's happening at the in the sacramental life of the church, which is what we have everywhere, right? Every place that there's a Catholic church, we have those sacramental graces available to us. But somehow we've become lukewarm. Somehow we've become, it's like we don't recognize the power, the beauty, that their ability to transform us, to change us, to lead us into a deeper life. And God has chosen this place to make that a reality. Like, you know, in these times of darkness, so many times people ask the question, where is God in all this? When is God? God, you got to do something. When are you going to do something? Look at the hell all around us. Look at the chaos that's happening. Well, guess what? God is doing something. God has done something, and he is doing something through the apparitions of the Virgin Mary in Medjugorje. And let me tell you why. Because when you enter more deeply into understanding what's happening there, the fruits of what is coming out of that place, the point of Medjugorje is not just that the Virgin Mary is appearing. She never does anything to draw attention to herself. She does everything only to draw people more deeply into the life of grace in her son. People go there and they encounter God and they leave there transformed, and they come back to their communities, to their homes, to their parishes, to their diocese, to their, you know, to their environment, and they want to make a difference there. And there's so many stories. We could do a whole episode about the fruits of Medjugorje too, but let me just tell you one thing, that there are probably, well, officially there are close to 1,000 men who've found their vocation to the priesthood through Medjugorje. Now, I say officially because there was when the Vatican was investigating Medjugorje, that one of the things they wanted to know was, what are the fruits? You know, if no one's been transformed or changed, this can't be authentic. You shall know them by their fruits, right? So what are the fruits of this place? And so the parish of Medjugorje invited priests who got their vocations through Medjugorje to send in their stories so that they could have a record of how many men got their vocations through Medjugorje. And that statistic was sent to the Vatican as part of the investigation. So it was like 700 or 800 men sent in their stories. But what I always say to people is those 700 or 800 people, first of all, that's a large number in and of itself. But I know many, many, many priests who had no idea that the parish was collecting this information and never sent their stories in. There's probably hundreds more who never sent their stories in, who weren't included in that official number. I also know many priests who were really struggling in their priesthood, who were in dark places with their priesthood, many that I know who are on the verge of leaving the priesthood, and somebody got them to Medjugorje and it transformed their priesthood. So I have many priest friends who say that they believe that the actual number of priests who either found their vocation to the priesthood in Medjugorje or had their vocation to the priesthood renewed through Medjugorje is probably in the thousands. So I say to people all the time, I challenge you, find me a place in our times where that many priests have been born of one single place, of one event. You won't find a place. And through these priests, and by the way, these priests are passionate. I know many, 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 many of them. They are on fire. They love the Lord. They love the rosary. They love adoration. They spend hours in the confessionals. Many of them have said, in these times when the church is being attacked, I am prepared to give my life. I'm prepared to give my life. So what is Our Lady doing in Medjugorje? She's raising an army of priests who are going out into the highways and byways, who are being those extended hands of Christ in the world. And she's also raising an army of lay people who have been transformed by Medjugorje. I know I'm one of those that Our Lady has raised up. I wouldn't be here were it not for that. And I can tell you from the other people like me that I know, like I said earlier, we are compelled. I am compelled. I can't not speak, because when you've tasted the most beautiful morsel of your life, you need to share it with others. You know, eye has not seen and ear has not heard what God has ready for those that love him. And when you've tasted just a tiny fraction of that, you want to tell the world about it.
Well,
Sorry, I've been talking on and
no,
on.
I love it. It's so because you're so passionate about it, and I think that I feel compelled to be like and tell my listeners and tell you. You know, I was raised Roman Catholic. My father is Jewish. My mother, God rest her soul, was Roman Catholic, and I was raised going to church. And then I married a man that was Episcopalian. And at first they didn't want my, you know, the priest was the parish that I went to get married at in outside of Philadelphia said, well, we're not going to offer communion to your new husband and his family. And because my family knew an archbishop, so that kind of changed. So we were able to have communion for everyone. Okay, so that we got married in the Catholic Church. Then I ended up having, I have three children, one born in 96, one born in 97, one born in 99. They were all baptized in the Catholic Church. But at the same time, all those reports were going on about the priests and boys. And for me personally, I was like, I can't put my, you know, my children at my, especially my sons in this vulnerable position. We left the Catholic Church. We went to the Episcopal Church down the street. Here I am. This is almost 30. My son's going to be 28 this summer. So it's been about, or let's say 23, 24, 25 years that I haven't really been a practicing Catholic. And, but I've never changed my relationship with God. I've always had this relationship with God. And today I even heard, I had coffee with a woman who said, well, I watched that movie Spotlight and I decided not to do. And I think that sometimes, again, the media has been putting all this dark. It's like there's definitely like Father Dan. I just, you know, I watched the interview with Father Dan, who I can't wait to meet, who talked about these things, but the darkness that's out there is really truly pulling people away.
Yeah, it and you know what it what happened in the church was horrific. I mean, the sex abuse, it's almost hard to know what was worse, the sex abuse scandal, the sex abuse that happened, or the cover up that followed it. You know, it just evil, evil all around. And it was an internal demonic attack on the church. You know, it was just a horrific thing that happened. But in and so we went through a time of purging. We really and we needed to go through a time of purging. It all needed to come to the light. It needs to continue coming to the light because that kind of darkness has no place in the church. It should not have a place in the church. But look at what has been happening. All of these priests that have been exposed and, you know, kicked out, you know, and imprisoned and all of that. And what happened? God is raising up a new army of priests. God is raising up a new army of priests who are in love with the Lord. You know, I so understand when people have been victimized by priests that it's hard for them to trust again. It's hard for them to trust the church. If I had a child that had that experience, I don't know. I don't know how it would be. I so understand the pain and suffering that people would, well, I can't understand it because I didn't have that experience, but I mean, I can imagine the pain and suffering that people experience. But you know, that's not, that wasn't God. That was weak and sinful men who took advantage of, you know, of innocent people for their own selfish needs. That's not who God is. And the God that we love and serve, the God that I want people to know and experience, is a God who brings healing, is a God who brings hope, brings renewal, who brings light, who brings love. And people can find that. And, you know, I sincerely hope that, you know, if there's anybody listening who's walked away from the church because of that, man, I get it. I get it. But I also would love for you to like consider looking, you know, looking to the church again in the true sense, not, you know, not the church as the human institution, but the church as the divinely established by Christ. You know, you mentioned Father Dan, who's a good friend of mine. He's going to be the spiritual director of this pilgrimage that you're going to be joining us on. Father Dan, I won't tell his whole story, but he had that experience of being abused, you know, by priests, and he is now a priest himself. Because and one of the beautiful things that he often says is that, you know, if you give your life to the Lord, God can take the wounds of your life, whatever they are, and he can glorify those wounds. And through those wounds, he can bring healing to other people. And so Father Dan, in his ministry, you know, he often says he finds people sort of flocking to him to tell him the stories of their own abuse without knowing anything about his background. And he says, I know it's the Lord leading them to me because the Lord healed those wounds of my life and glorified those wounds and is using that healing now to bring healing to others. And that's what the Lord wants to do and can do for anybody who's been so deeply wounded.
Well, I am just again over the moon to meet you in a couple weeks. I
I think
feel so honored, and I know that it was God that put, thanks to Karen Shaw who introduced us,
Yep.
and my friend Amanda who's been telling me all about it. It's been, I think one of the biggest things that there has to be some more forgiveness in this world, rather than so much hate. And so much of like carrying around these burdens and this darkness, we gotta let it go and just get to this place where God is so good. And that's, I will never forget hearing a priest say, if you wanna see God, go to any church basement, because especially pre-COVID, where AA meetings were all the time, you can see people that find the Lord, and it's just like, in it's just
And
the lights come on.
literally the lights come on. Yeah, you see them glow afterwards.
It's so true. And I feel like now they're even trying to like poo-poo that a little bit more. And I'm like, wait a minute. No. We got to keep
No.
that, right? We've got to keep that
Totally.
because it's where, joy comes and peace comes. I love your angel behind you. It's
Oh,
beautiful.
it's Saint Michael.
Oh, it's Saint Michael. Look at that. I couldn't see it as well. Saint Michael, beautiful. And it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. You guys, I can't wait to come back and tell you what happens. As you guys know, I will. I'm going to be a blabbermouth. I can't wait to see what happens after 10 days being with you all and being with Father Dan. It's going to be an amazing adventure. And I love that you brought up God so much. And if you're in this time of Lent and or Passover, wherever you are in your spiritual journey, just be open and willing, open and willing.
And you'll see miracles unfold before you.
It's so true. Get that anxiety and fear away, And I feel like that what's going on today, and I'm going to end with this, which I put down here, the drugs and meaning literally the physical drugs and pharmaceuticals that are administered to p Americans today. I'm just going to speak for America because I know it the best. And the fentanyl and the drugs and the alcohol that's out there are killing more of our society than cancer or anything else. And nobody wants to talk about how that is pure darkness. And I say this all the time on my podcast, and I'll just tell you because you don't know this, but I feel like when I was drinking, when you go into an old church, like let's say in Inner Philadelphia or Massachusetts or somewhere, you go in an old church that's been sitting there a long time, and you see a stained glass window at the end of the church, and it's all filled with soot because no one's been there to clean it in so long. It's just been sitting. And that's like my soul was when I was drinking. It was filled with that soot, that darkness, the drugs and the alcohol did. But when I got sober, all that soot started to disappear slowly and slowly. And I feel as humans, we're all like that beautiful stained glass window.
Amen. Amen. That's beautiful. That's such a yeah, that's beautiful. And I just want to add on to that, this crisis that the world is in with addictions, with drugs, with all of that. Maybe many of your listeners will know this quote, but it's a quote by the great Saint Augustine who said, "My heart was made for you, O Lord, and it shall not rest until it rests in you." All of that stuff that people do, it's because they're seeking to fill an emptiness inside. And but once you've tasted the real, the God who can who the God-shaped hole, right? God is the one who fills that space. You don't need any of that stuff anymore. That stuff is, it doesn't, it can't even come close to filling you the way the Lord can. And I just pray that people can discover that, because it is life-changing. It is life-transforming, and it lifts you up out of darkness straight into the light of Christ and into the light of the day.
Amen. We're gonna leave it with that, you guys. It was beautiful. I'm sure Anne's gonna be back. I can tell you that right now. I can feel it
To come back anytime.
already. I can't wait. So if you guys have been listening, I hope this helped you on your journey to sobriety and getting to a place where you start to love yourself and love God and know that you are never, ever, ever alone. Don't believe those lies ever. You can always reach me at Elizabeth at elizabethchance.com. I'm going to see if Anne will let me put her email if anybody wants to reach out. She said yes. She's waving her head yes.
Yes.
And I will put her email if you guys have any questions for Anne. That will be in the description as well. And until next time, everybody, keep getting busy, living sober. Bye, everybody.
Bye.